Hello everybody to the next episode of Blog Tales, our podcast. I'm Katharina from Lunar Vision, and today I have with me Rebecca Revel. I hope I pronounced it right. And she is a co-founder of NFT Club Berlin, an NFT artist. And maybe, Rebecca, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'd be happy to. You started perfectly. I mostly identify as myself as an artist, a traditional artist, a painter, anything on sort of paper medium, a lot of ink and watercolor. But I have had a long journey. I've done art my entire life, but I also went into the academic side of things as well. And I have a PhD in art and Buddhist studies and anthropology. And I'm also currently working for Solana, Super Team Germany. And I'm involved in a lot of the communities here in Berlin. And yeah, that's about it.
Amazing. Thank you. Actually, the communities are where we met also, right? And then I saw you also at an Next Block Expo, and we got talking. But it took us some time to get started, right? We met for 4 times, I think, before we finally talked.
That happens so frequently in this scene. Like, there's sometimes I see people regularly and I never really get to meet them. And I notice that if I don't sit down and have a proper conversation and have some kind of like meaningful exchange, my brain doesn't really save them or register them. And so I do notice that there is like a large network of people where you sort of know, but it's really nice to get to know somebody a bit better.
That's true, especially on these, how do you call it? Like networking events, but it's more like network speed dating, kind of, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
And then you don't get there. So for our listeners to get to know you a bit better, how would you explain what you're doing to your grandma?
Well, that's a little bit tricky. I mean, even my mom is already in her mid-70s. And I've really noticed that it really depends on if somebody is wanting to learn, right? There's a lot of people where if you say anything about, oh, I'm working in the world of digital stuff, they're like, oh, that's, I don't know anything about that. Whereas there's also some people where, like my mom, it was important for her to understand what I do. So she kept asking questions. She's like, okay, well, what is blockchain? Well, what does it mean to have an NFT? Like, what is that? So I think it really depends on the person you're talking to, depending on how much you want to break it down. And I generally will tell people that I'm sort of working in the world of even talking about blockchains can be a little bit tricky sometimes, but I sometimes stick to talking about like digital art curation and stuff like that, because there's also a little bit less of a stigma around it too.
So digital art creation, how does this differ in your point of view from blockchain itself? Or is it just easier to explain?
It's just easier to explain. So especially in the last year with NFT Club Berlin, we did a lot of local exhibitions and a lot of our events were focused around art. And because my background is an artist, I really wanted to sort of uplift the local artist community here, everybody working with NFTs, and also onboard people as well. So that was my area of expertise. And that's what I focused a lot on. We did a lot of different exhibitions last year, and a little bit this year as well. We're taking a little bit of a break, but sort of it's a very different world compared to the traditional art world. And so when I tell people that we do exhibitions that have screens that show animations or moving images or digital art, they're like, oh, okay, I get that. And then if you can get into the conversation of like, well, what if I wanted to buy it? And then you're like, well, actually, there's a possibility if you get a wallet like this, and then you just go to this website, and then you can click here, and then look, it comes into your wallet and you own that artwork, right? So it gives it a little bit of a understandable user exchange as well, that people can sometimes understand in a bit of an easier way. It's a little bit less abstract. So yeah, that's often what I'll say.
But I mean, I get that people have a bit of difficulties to get in there because it's abstract. But how did you get there? I mean, you said that you all, like, everyone can see if we follow you on LinkedIn and stuff, that you are actually, you studied philosophy and you are into the Buddhist theory, I think. So how did you get to create NFT art? I mean, it's not the direct way, I guess.
No, definitely not. So I had done my PhD and I was a little bit burnt out from the academic world. And I've worked as a tattoo artist actually to help support my studies. So I've had some kind of art in my life. And I've always done art for myself. And I studied fine art in the beginning of my studies too. So after doing my PhD, I was like, you know what? I still want to continue following my dream of trying to support myself as an artist. I need a break from academia. And this was 2019 or so. And I started live streaming my art process on Twitch. And so I got a little bit more into the younger generation tech sort of, I got a little bit onboarded into that world. So that was like my first stepping stone that sort of softened, because back, I didn't even own a smartphone in 2019. I've been very sort of analog and old school for a very long time. At my last apartment, I didn't even have internet in like 2019 or so. Actually, 2018. And so I've always, lived a little bit more of an analog, very sort of simple, less technological life. And getting into streaming and Twitch was my first step towards, making an effort to understand things more. And then I streamed really hardcore for a long time, and through the pandemic as well, because there's not much else you could do. And then I was asked to be the lead artist on an NFT project. I was like, well, what's that? And it's sort of in my nature to want to understand things. And I have that researcher background. So I just kind of like really get into stuff. And I was like, okay, well, how do we make this project successful? What do we need to do? What kind of people do we need to know? What do other successful projects do? So I kind of put my researcher hat back on and really dove into it, because of course it would be great if the project was successful. And I thought it had a lot of potential. Looking at the other things that were out there, I was like, okay, this is something interesting and unique. And I think the art that I'm doing for it's great and different. And long story short, the NFT project rugged me, and the project never happened. I did all the art, but they completely fell apart. And but I was already so deep into it where I'm like, oh, well, this is my home now. So, and I've been here ever since.
I can barely believe this, actually, that you like put yourself out in the blue ocean from no internet at home in 2019, something I can really barely believe, to becoming an NFT artist in 2023. That's amazing. How did this feel? Like, how did you survive without internet in 2019?
There's internet at my tattoo studio, right? So it was like, I would just go to a cafe, and when you're at home, I just would read or watch, I had some movies on a hard drive, or, I grew up in a very Buddhist house. So, and I'm used to going to monasteries. My PhD work was based in an anthropological study in Thailand. So the place where I was in Thailand, there was like a rural Buddhist village. Like, there's nothing. They grow their own vegetables. They do everything themselves. Like, there's nothing. So I'm very used to sort of a very simple, removed life. It wasn't anything particularly unusual. And then I was doing an exchange program or exchange kind of grant thing to UBC in Vancouver. I'm originally Canadian, by the way. But I hadn't spent that much time in Vancouver, and it was winter, and my mom was like, oh, I have an old iPhone. Would you like it so you don't get lost? And I was like, oh, okay, I guess. And ever since then, I've had a phone. And it makes my life pretty easy, actually.
I guess.
But it's also very addictive. So it's like a...
But it's really, really interesting and cool to hear that you actually did this until just recently, like that you actually denied to go online and to be in this also kind of stressful way sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. With always being available, always being online and stuff.
Yeah, no, people knew that if they sent me an email, it might take a few days. I mean, I had like a, you know, the Nokia, the little plastic Nokia phones. So like I could get phone calls and I could send little text messages, but that's all I needed. Like it was very simple.
I mean, they had their upsides. You could throw them against a wall and they would still survive. Try this with a phone today.
I had it for like 10 years. It was great.
Yeah. That's true. So how did you get, like, okay, you just told us how you started with art and how you came into the NFT space, but how did you actually kind of like understand the blockchain technology that basically is needed to create NFTs, right? And all the tech behind NFTs so that you understood you want to do this? Because I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, that you also wanted to understand what you're doing from a mm-hmm. kind of technical perspective, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was learning a new language, right? Like it can be really kind of painful and confusing, but if you stick with it, it can be rewarding. And I just spent a long time reading different articles and trying to figure it out, watching very basic YouTube videos. I'm like, okay, these are what blocks are. These are what nodes are. And I still am no technical expert whatsoever. And it is something that I would also really enjoy getting deeper into. For example, at the moment, we have a build station in Berlin where we're doing a lot of workshops on Tuesday and Fridays. We have like full days of workshops, and a lot of them are technical workshops for the developers that are working on the global hackathon, Grizzlython, right now. And I really enjoy sitting in and listening and just being like, it's absolutely incredible the depth of knowledge that you can get in one particular area of, you know, developing things around security on Solana or Solana Pay or different like payment integrations. Like there's so many different really interesting aspects that I doubt I will ever be able to get that deep into it, but I really enjoy still learning about things that I'm not an expert in.
I think there's so many areas in blockchain and Web3 that you will, like, none of us will ever be able mm-hmm. to fully understand every area of them mm-hmm. because it's just too much, I think. How should we do this? I mean, there are so many different chains. There's so yeah. many different applications. And to understand all of this, we would probably have to learn, I don't know, 10 programming languages. And most of us already fail at the first. So,
yeah, and I think, you know, it's okay that we're not experts in everything, right? Like I also learned that through my academic work that, you know, if you specialize in one thing, there are a lot of other things that become applicable to that. Like it's okay that I'm not a big brain developer because I have other skill sets, whereas they might not know that much about the one-of-one art space, but I have different kind of knowledge and able to help onboard artists and tell them the different kinds of marketplaces, or being able to help them with understanding the ecosystem a little bit more. Like I think it's really valuable that we all come with these different skill sets and that we're all kind of building Web3 with a really wide range of abilities, because there's some people that like me are better or more knowledgeable about community development or I don't know, marketing strategies, or there's some people that are just incredible in terms of, yeah, social media engagement, for example. So it's like all these aspects kind of have to come together. And it's one thing I really love about Web3 is that it gives us the ability to all work together and share our different skills. And we don't necessarily all need to be, you know, the really like hardcore developers, but everybody kind of supports each other in the ecosystem.
Yeah. How do you see the ecosystem currently? Like in 2021, Bored Ape was, and 2022 also was like super valuable. It was like super, super expensive. Mm-hmm. But now that everything crashed a bit, like Bitcoin crashed and all the others followed, NFTs, do you think the hype is over? And like, what's your stand on the current market?
So it's normal that things go up and down. And it wasn't just blockchain that crashed. It wasn't just our little bubble market. It was everything. It was stocks, collectibles, housing, like so many things. It's kind of like a very general global crash, but sometimes we can be in our little bubble. Like my husband is really into collectibles, a certain genre of collectibles. And everybody in that world was freaking out when it crashed. But you know, if we look at the bigger picture, it's much more of a on a global scale. And I really think that, I mean, there is still a lot of building going on, and you can see that there is a lot of progress being made, not even in a bear market. I mean, I really like calling it a build market, actually. And I have noticed that it's been, in some ways, almost nicer to have this a little bit slower pace. There's a lot less like insanity and hype and people just trying to get on the train because they think they can make some quick money, or a lot of scammers have left, and a lot of the projects that were trying to, you know, do devious things. Like, it's, you have to be serious and committed to still be here. And so the quality of people and projects in the space, I think, has also benefited from that. Things go up and down. That's the nature of reality. And there's always going to be change. And I think the technology that's being built is so revolutionary that it's only a matter of time before it gets implemented more and more. And you can see a few like enormous brands taking it on, but it's not obvious to the consumer that it's based on blockchain. So I think that's eventually going to be how it's used. Sort of like how we don't know, I don't know anything about my Wi-Fi router or my cell phone servicing, right? I don't know anything about that. I just know that it works. And so I think in a very similar way, we're seeing the user interfaces become so much more user-friendly. It's not quite there yet, but it will get to the point where people are using blockchain NFTs and they don't necessarily even know it.
Right now, I think we're not yet there. So especially if I take a look, for example, at social media, you are able to use NFTs as your profile pictures, for example. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, or you also you should be able to display NFTs on Instagram, but even though this is possible, people don't know that. For example, a hexagonal shape of your profile picture at Twitter means that it is an NFT, or they are rather scared than hyped by seeing something like that because they don't understand it yet. But art is only one possible use case for NFTs. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many others that are discussed, for example, ticket NFTs and music NFTs, which is kind of also art, but different kind of art. So do you solely focus on NFTs as collectibles? And that's also how they are called by the big social media companies right now, to not scare people, right? It's digital collectibles instead of NFTs. Or where do you see the technology emerging in the future?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? They're sort of using different terminologies. They're not saying wallet, or, you know, they're That's what I mean when I say that the technology is going to be kind of hidden, because the term NFT hasn't had the best PR. So it's definitely being changed around and used. And yeah, most people don't know. And I think in the future it might turn into they still don't know that the tickets that they have are actually on the blockchain. They just know that they have an app and all of their tickets from the past are saved in that app, which they think is cool, right? Or they know that it's a secure thing that, you know, that you can't scalp tickets anymore, or you can transfer it, but, you know, it's has a different kind of user experience, but they don't necessarily know that it's based on the blockchain. And I think that there are an incredible number of use cases. And I think it's only just beginning to start to see some of the potentials. I mean, in terms of like academia and scientific research, what's possible is mind blowing, or in real estate, or, you know, there's so many different areas. And the creative world, the art world, is obviously one of the very first that started. And so it is much more robust, and it's sort of the first thing that people think of is either like these PFP collections. And then one of one art is also becoming more popular, you know, obviously with Beeple being sort of like the first biggest person to represent that. But even still, one of one art is really, really developing quickly in a bunch of different ecosystems. And so you can see within each chain too, there's a sort of like these little bubbles within bubbles, you know. And even in the last year, the one of one art community and development on Solana has been astronomical. You can like it's really quite mind blowing, especially in a bear market, to see how many new artists have come, how the ecosystem has developed, the number of communities of, you know, different people trying to come together and support artists and work together and do different really interesting things, build collections, do fractionalization. There's so much innovation that's happening. So I think we can start seeing within the art world some of the creativity that can happen. And that's also transferring over into different areas as well, so where people have great ideas that they can apply to gaming or, yeah, ticketing or all these different aspects, right?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of options there. I was just thinking, why were artists the first to adopt this technology?
It's sort of, from what I understand, it went hand in hand with. So there was a few very, very beginning examples of artists and working with in different like hackathons with developers. And they were like, well, how do I own something digital? And so the first kind of example of that would be, what about a JPEG, right? How do I do that? Because it's a very somehow like a tangible thing. Like I can see the file of my art and it has a little picture. It's maybe more tangible than a piece of music or a ticket, which has a lot more complexity to it. And there's something too about, there's artists that are kind of pushing the boundaries of, well, what's possible. And having royalties available as well is an incredible, it's revolutionary for artists, which was tried to be, there was some ideas about how to implement it back, I think even in the 70s, of how to get artists royalties. And so there was a few things that I think came together and a few people that had that as their focus. And I think also generative artists as well, and sort of the marriage between NFTs and fine art was also, you know, because there's also art collectors. And so it is a very like rich market to tap into. Mm-hmm. But there is, I have read about the specific occasions that led to art being the first one, but it's been a while. I'd have to definitely look up those resources again to like give a very specific answer.
But it's actually pretty cool that there is research about this already. I mean, this technology is so young.
I wouldn't say it's research, but there is some documentation about some of the first cases.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think this is kind of what's also part of the beauty of blockchain and Web3 and you name it, Bitcoin, NFT, all that is connected to this, because you just said earlier that they didn't have the best PR like the NFTs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, how should they? There is no single entity deciding what to do and where to spend the money for marketing or how to do, because it's just community driven, right? It's a bunch of people who want to build. And that's also how Bitcoin does never have a CEO or something, because it's not it's not one single entity.
Exactly. And well, it's community driven, but what comes into the news, it gets filtered through, you know, different events like FTX, for example, or the different things where they're like, oh, well, that's just a scam, right? Because there are a lot of shady things that the blockchain has been used for. I mean, it's like when the internet came out, email and internet scams wouldn't exist without the internet as well. So of course, with new technology comes people trying to exploit it. And there has been a lot of misunderstanding, and the state of journalism, I could go on a rant on that, but I won't. You know, people actually trying to understand what it is and communicating it clearly is not the priority of the press. And typically there's more interest in sort of shock value and, oh, how crazy is this? Look at these, look at these monkey JPEGs that are being sold for 50 grand. Like it's about developing some kind of reaction to it, and it works. And so typically all people have heard about in terms of NFTs are like, oh, those are scams though, right? So what gets transferred into the general public is unfortunately a lot around some of the bad actors, or that it's just very misunderstood. And so I think one of the things that will potentially change that is either people getting involved themselves, or they know somebody that, an art friend, for example, that's got involved. But I think that's going to be the much smaller number, because it takes a lot of time and energy and also self-reflection to be like, okay, I don't understand this, but I would like to. I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt, or I'm going to do some research and make up my own mind. Whereas most people have their minds made up and they're not interested in changing it. But I think what will really start changing it is once people start using it, like those through Starbucks or through their football club, where they own a bunch of like football clips as NFTs or something, but they don't know it's NFTs. I think one of the main ways that it will change is that once people are using the technology and then they understand later on, they're like, oh, so this is what that is. Oh, that's not that bad. Like, oh, I see. Oh, this is actually kind of interesting, right? Like, we have to really neutralize the term, or also, like we mentioned earlier, there's a lot of companies using different terms because NFT is not a neutral, people don't think about it neutrally.
Yeah, true. But I mean, first steps are made, right? And more people getting involved. For example, on events like you just told me before we started this call that the listeners don't know that you went to NFT Paris. Mm-hmm. So there have been not only people already in for years, right? There have been new people, mm-hmm. haven't there?
I assume so. Yeah. It was absolutely packed. There was a huge number of people, and it was this venue that was directly across from the Eiffel Tower. So it was very central, and it was really interesting to see. But it was a lot of the big names, and you can see that there is absolutely still interest, and there's a lot of people innovating, and there is a lot of money that is being made still. I don't want to know how much it costs to have a stand there, but absolutely. No, the interest is still there. I don't know what the new acquisition rate is for people or communities, or how many new people are still coming. Obviously there is, but is not as obvious as when in the bull market.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable to some extent. For all those who have not been there yet, but would like to attend such an event, what should they expect?
That's actually a hard question, because there's a really wide spectrum of these kinds of events. And there's, you know, obviously really big NFT conferences like NFT NYC and all over the world, whereas we also had last year NFT Berlin for the first time, which is a lot more small scale. But typically at NFT conferences and also like Web3 conferences as well, a little bit more generally, you can expect a wide range of talks, especially on different use cases. There's often gaming and art and music, or yeah, ticketing, or the creator marketplaces, platforms, different tooling for creators. There's often a wide range of things that are discussed, as well as different companies and brands having a presence there as well, or sometimes even blockchain. For example, at NFT Paris, Tezos had a little stand as well. So yeah, it's generally bringing a whole bunch of different people from the ecosystem together to sort of share knowledge or promote themselves. Sometimes there's even like a gallery area, but that is also hasn't been quite developed in a way where it can, you know, be really considered like a, I haven't seen it done well yet. So let's say that. And then the variability of how many people attend, how big the event is, where it is, how nice it is, how expensive the food is, if you have 12 euro hot dogs on sale or if you have free food. There's a lot of variation within that. And then of course a lot of people say that it's not about the conference, it's about the side events. So typically at these conferences, afterwards or during or before or after the conference times, there are a wide range of events put on by different organizations. For example, in Paris, the NFT Factory is a location that has sort of like a gallery and a co-working space. They had different events. I went to a brunch, a World Women brunch there, for example, or there's after parties, of course, and there was like a football event that a bunch of guys went to that I know that they're like, that was the best networking event ever. I was like, gosh, I should learn to play football. And that's generally the layout.
Okay, so basically everyone who wants to attend should do their own research on where are these side events, how's the venue, mm-hmm. what are the additional costs that you didn't plan mm-hmm. for food or mm-hmm. accommodation. And one thing that I want to ask, because I'm not sure if all of our listeners can imagine, what do they have to imagine when you're talking of an NFT gallery? Because, I mean, there will not be like a painting frame and someone painted something, right? How do they look like?
So there's a wide variations. For example, at NFT Paris, they had there is a few different like rows of screens in one section of the building. And there was a bunch of different artists on rotation. And so you can see, the 3D art or animation or photography, or it's usually a wide mix of art mediums. Other ones will have sort of like a room that's dedicated to just full of screens. Actually, the NFT Factory, they had some interesting screens that looked, they didn't really look like TV screens the same way. They were more a little bit matte, you know, like a Kindle kind of, and they had a frame around it. So it wasn't immediately clear that it was a screen. Like, I think if you had certain kinds of artwork on it, you wouldn't recognize it immediately as a proper screen. And so the technology that's being developed for screens is also really interesting. But sometimes there's also projections, sometimes there's installations. It's a wide range of how to display art. And with conferences, usually it's not one of their main priorities or areas of expertise of how to make a nice gallery space. So yeah, there's a long way to go in terms of making it uplifting it, shall we say.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see how it will look in the future. And I guess NFT artists are open to advise all the conference organizers out there to how they would like their art to be presented in a proper way. So if anyone is listening, hit Rebecca up and she's going to be your...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because digital art curation is such a new topic and there's so many new things to consider. When you have a space and you're only hanging paintings, it takes away a lot of the different factors. You know, you still need to curate the space in a really kind of interesting and dynamic way. And with screens, though, there's so many questions of like, okay, is it one artist per screen? Is that artist doing multiple artworks per screen? Is it one artwork per screen? If it is multiple artists per screen, how do we curate it so it doesn't, like, it's not clashing with itself? How long do we show the artwork? What do we do with the cables? What do we do with lighting? How, like, because if it's too bright, you know, it changes the quality of the screen. How do we display the artist name and title and all of this kind of stuff, right? So there's a lot more complexity to it. And it is going to take some time to sort of develop a little bit more of, a higher standard, I think, and sort of get the basics of like, this is what is expected. And this is how you kind of properly can show these artists. But it's slowly but surely, I think we'll get there.
It's going to be a super interesting journey, I guess, that we all can see there. Maybe we are already good in time. Let's wrap it up with our last question before we say goodbye to our listeners. Which would be your blog tale? So your crypto story in 30 seconds. Once upon a time.
Once upon a time... I was asked to join a questionable project. I said yes and went deep down the rabbit hole. I did an incredible amount of work, lots of art, and I won't give the details of how I was wronged because I wasn't good. But as the dust settled, I emerged in a very cozy world of new Web3 friends and inspiring communities and amazing artists. And I ended up here to stay. So
amazing. And we want you to stay with us in this emerging Web3 world. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for being with me today. I wish you a very nice day and all the listeners out there too. And hope to see you soon at the next event.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here and really, really lovely chatting with you. Thank you so much.